Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm delighted to welcome back to the show a leading authority on innovative thinking, human performance, and goal achievement, Mitch Matthews. Mitch has worked with leaders and teams from organizations like NASA, Disney, Pioneer, and the Principal Financial Group. And he also works one-on-one with leaders as an elite executive coach. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today. It's pretty important information that he is here to share. Today, plus he has also created a life and business coach training program that has been utilized around the globe. And again, we're going to be talking about concepts and kind of how-to tips. Very important. You need to have a dream, but you also need to know how to put those dreams into, you know, bite-sized chunks so you can take those steps. So when Mitch was here last, we talked about big dream gatherings, and we're definitely going to touch on that again today as there's just so much to talk about. But we're also going to be talking about life coaching and business coaching, which is so important for those of us who are solo or entrepreneurs. Mitch, good morning and welcome back to your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning, Denise. It's so great to be back. I so appreciate it.
Well, you know, the last time you were here, we had a bit of a kerfluffle.
That's one of my favorite words, although I don't know how to spell it.
That was a great way to put it.
Absolutely.
For some reason, your phone wouldn't let you in, and you finally wound up calling in on your cell phone, and I did some hula hooping while I was waiting for you to get here.
You did. There was some dancing going on, but I listened to it again and thought, doggone, I interrupted Denise. She was rolling. I shouldn't have called in.
Well, it turned out beautifully, and I was so glad you were here last time, but because of that, we didn't have the full hour with you. So I am taking full advantage of the full hour, and I'm not going to interrupt you much. My nose just grew.
Well, you ask great questions, so you interrupt me as much as you want to, and I'm grateful for the tech problem. If, you know, that gets me back on the show, I'm all about it.
You can come back anytime.
Great.
So listen, before we kind of jump into it, tell people a little bit about yourself if they didn't have a chance to listen to our last interview, and tell them where they can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you boil down all that we do, really, you know, I'm kind of a simple guy. I have a book, but there's drawings and pictures in it. I'm that kind of guy. But really, if you boil things down, what we do is we help people to dream bigger and achieve more. And, you know, that plays out in a number of different ways. We work with organizations on innovation and solution strategy. I work one-on-one with individuals, executives, leaders on kind of helping them figure out what some of their big plan or big dreams are and how to go after them, those types of things. We have the Big Dream Gathering, which is a true passion. You just mentioned that. We talked about that the last time, where we invite people to these very special events where they get to come and in a very safe and fun way post their dreams on the wall anonymously and hopefully get some help or some encouragement to go after those dreams. And then, as you mentioned, kind of the last part of that, maybe the last wheel on the car, is a training program for elite business and elite life coaches. We just found that as we were helping people go after their dreams, we realized there was more and more of a need to get more coaches out there to help that happen. So, you know, since 2008, we've been training coaches, and then in 2011, we brought that training online and have been able to, that's allowed us to get it out and around the world, which is really exciting. So people can find me at mitchmatthews.com, MitchMatthews. That's probably the easiest one. I've got other websites, but that's probably the best place to start.
You know, one of the questions I have, because coaching, you mentioned 2008. Excuse me, I'm really raspy today. I haven't
spoken
to anybody. You're the first person I've actually spoken to.
You've got that late night DJ voice going on.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I don't know.
I have been up and moving since 5 o'clock this morning. I just haven't had to talk to anybody.
You need more coffee. That's what it is.
That's
my answer to everything. I can get a cut on my arm and say, you know what? I need more coffee.
Well, I've got a giant mug of coffee on my desk, but it's cold.
Well,
I forgot to drink it.
Anyway, your question. I keep interrupting you.
Listen, you interrupt and then I'll interrupt back because we're good at this.
It'll be like family.
Here's my question. You mentioned 2008, and that's about the time that I noticed that entrepreneurs really, I mean, we've always been serious about our craft and, you know, our passions and sharing, but that's when I noticed people really stepped up and said, okay, there's a lot of things going on in the world right now that are kind of icky.
Yeah.
So is that what you noticed as well, that in 2008 people really stepped up to the plate and started, you know, putting it out there, so we're here to help you?
Well, it's interesting because I'd love to say yes. And looking back, I would totally agree with you that, you know, maybe hindsight's 20/20, but I would say that 2008 was a shift where people that were either entrepreneurs already or thinking about becoming entrepreneurs, you know, it wasn't the easiest market to be in. And it almost seemed like everybody was kind of cinching up and either bailing or committing at a new level and asking for help. So I'd love to say that, yes, us launching our coach program was in response directly to that. Nah, I'm not that strategic. Maybe I'm now a little bit more. But
look, I gave you that opening. Should have gone with it.
In some ways, for me, what I really, a lot of times, some of the things that we do is based on strategy. Other times, it's because the market demands it. And that's what was starting to happen with me was I had my own coaching practice. And what I started, you know, people were finding out about it, and it was great. But then as entrepreneurs or people that were thinking about becoming entrepreneurs were hearing about me coaching, they didn't just want me to work with them one-on-one. They started to say, train me up to do what you do. And I think that in some ways, you know, my first round of training, honestly, was in direct reaction to somebody saying, I will pay you, train me to do what you do. And so my first wasn't a wildly strategic thing, I'm going to point all of my business towards this. It was just, hey, there's a need, I'm going to try to fill that need. And I really based the training on, you know, kind of sound coaching coaching principles and strategies that I'd learned over the years. But for me, another huge part of that was the business side of it, the business components, because that was something that was missing when I first got my training. I was really passionate about coaching. I love to coach people. And so I looked for training that kind of helped me to do that, helped me to take that to the next level. But there was no business training in that. And that was something for me, as I started to train other coaches, I realized I was as passionate about the coaching as I was about getting them the business principles that they needed to actually have a business, not just, you know, coach people or serve people, but have a business. And so that's something that we've been doing more and more of over the years, too, is that coupling of sound coaching concepts with business strategy, because they need each other.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. And we were talking about this in the green room a moment ago. It's one thing to have business coaching or even life coaching, but if you don't have those actionable steps that you need to take, you're kind of just out there, you know, you've got a head full of, you know, really great thoughts, and you've got some, you know, good wisdom going on, and, you know, you've got some, oh, that was a really cool sentence. What did he say? Let me go back and rethink about that, but you don't have actionable steps to take.
Exactly.
And I think that's where a lot of coaching fails, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of one of those things where a lot of people that gravitate towards coaching are natural encouragers. They're natural visionaries. That's where they want to go. But a lot of times, you know, we want to stay in that visionary mode, and we have to force ourselves, or maybe it's not our natural default, to move into kind of the doing side of things. And that's not always the case, but that's definitely something I've seen. And so it's not that we're not able to do that, But it's one of those things where we have to be equipped. It almost has to be, it's that known quantity that you can't quite put your finger on until it's brought out into the light. And once it's out into the light, then we can go after it. And like you said, mm-hmm. if we're given some practical skills, some practical strategies to build off of. And really one of the things, you know, with helping people go after their big dreams, you know, helping people build a coaching practice is kind of a microcosm of, you know, pursuing any big dream. It's those things of what's the vision, what's your passion, why do you want to do it, but then also what are those tactical things that you need to do to make that a reality. So it's truly a passion for us. I love to get to it.
And that makes sense to me. I mean, you can be inspired all day long. Just go look for quotes.
Yes,
and those
exactly.
quotes may uplift you a bit, but they don't give you any practical direction.
That's exactly right. And that's I'm all about, you know, we need to do things to encourage ourselves. We need to do things mm-hmm. to encourage each other and those types of things. But really, it's, you know, that perfect balance is that encouragement and vision, but also within tactical and application.
That's exactly right. I mean, just as a good for instance, and you know, I was listening to Dave Ramsey on Audible yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Not only does he tell you why you should be doing what you should be doing, but he tells you how to do it.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, is what coaching is all about.
Teacher. I love yes. him as a teacher yeah. because, you know, he's just an incredible storyteller. So, you know, you're laughing as he's mm-hmm. also maybe inflicting a little bit of pain, you know,
yeah.
where you realize, oh, man, he's bringing the hurt. But I love him because, you know, he's bringing truth and tactic. And, you know, one of the other things that he just does beautifully is he gets to your why. He helps you, before he mm-hmm. ever even introduces any specific strategies, he helps you to get clear on why it is you want to do something, why it is you want to make that change, why it is you want to do this. I mean, I'll never forget, I got to see him speak, and he, I don't know if you've ever seen him do it, but he basically
no.
threw out the analogy of, I've got a 50-pound bag, and I'd offer anybody $20 to carry it 10 miles. Who'd take me up on it? And nobody raised their hand except for one smart alecky guy in the back, right? But nobody raised their hand. Now he said, okay, let's just change this. He says, now I've got a 5-year-old girl who weighs 50 pounds. She's going to die unless somebody can get her to the hospital.
Uh-oh.
The only way you can get her there is 10 miles through the country, and you've got a carrier. Who's willing? Every
mm-hmm.
hand in the room shot up. And he's like, that is the power of why. And if you figure out your why, the how will come. You will do what it takes to get it done. And I just thought that was, you know, he's just brilliant in that way.
And, you know, once you reframe that, it's almost like your brain, your neurons realign or something.
Yeah,
and
exactly
it doesn't take
right.
much.
Like,
it's almost instant.
We will find a way.
Right, right.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it was an instantaneous reaction, wasn't it? I mean, people
it's
didn't
amazing.
Have to think
Absolutely.
Or converse or sit around and think, well, what are you? Let me ask my mom. They just
yeah.
instantly got it.
That's exactly right. That's
yeah.
exactly. We have a coaching model that we take our coaches through, and it's based on the scientific method. So we talk a lot about discovery and clarifying what it is you want to go after, and then
mm-hmm.
building a hypothesis, which I absolutely love the scientific method. I didn't like it as a kid because I didn't like biology or science, but now I love it because, you know, you take it as a model. Like, for example, the hypothesis is one of the best metaphors to use for a plan because a scientist creates a hypothesis as a best guess at how something's going to go down, and then you test it. That's the only way. And the only way a hypothesis fails is if you don't test it. It's not a failure if it doesn't go the way you thought because you've just eliminated one, you know, one potential option, and you just change your hypothesis, those types of things. And then the rest of the coaching model follows along with that, scientific method as far as experimenting and then evaluating and adjusting. The only step out of the scientific method that we take is a step that we call remembering why. And it's all about helping that person you're working with to figure out their why. They may figure out what it is they want to do, their big plan, their big goal, and they may have a great plan for doing it. But unless they're clear on their why, they're going to give up, or they're going to bail when it gets hard, or they're going to walk away, or they'll get distracted, those types of things. But if they're clear on their why, you help them exponentially increase the chance for them to actually implement that and achieve that goal or that dream.
Mitch, how often do people come to you and to your coaching programs or talking with you one-on-one? And they are just absolutely clear on their why. They know why they're doing this. And then after they go through the process, they understand that their why had nothing at all to do with what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that
right.
happen well, often?
It does happen often. I mean, you know, there's a couple of different parts of that. Is I think one is we, no matter what, I believe that a lot of times we're given dreams and goals just because it's the ultimate reminder that we're on a journey. And it's mm-hmm. about the entire journey. It's not just about that one particular goal or that one particular task. And, you know, sometimes people, I think, as they start to pursue something like launching their own coaching practice or whatever, they realize, you know, that is a big goal and it's an important goal to go after. But it also helps them to realize kind of their overall life experience and that their why is about, you know, going out, starting a business or helping people. But it's also about learning about themselves and, you know, getting to see the world from a different perspective. I had the joy of getting to talk with somebody that I coached a couple of years ago. This morning, I got to reconnect with her, and her big dream was to launch her own business and start a photography business. And she really applied a lot of the business concepts that we talked about on, you know, talk about in our coaching program. But one of the things that she was most excited about was that her business is booming now. There's been times where really, you know, it's been lean, it's been tough, but her business is booming now, and she was just beaming. And it was partly because of what was going on with her business, but it was as much about the life experiences that she was realizing she was having along the way. And I think that's, you know, that's what I think sometimes gets revealed as someone starts to pursue a dream, like, you know, launching a coaching practice or any business or any big dream. Is that it's about that dream or that goal, but it's also about the journey and what we learn about ourselves along the way. And that starts to reveal kind of more powerful and bigger whys.
So once you start to peel back those layers, onion layer, so to speak, you're on a journey to find out more about yourself as well, aren't you? And what your true power is, what your true passion is.
Absolutely. Kind of in some ways, it's all about kind of drilling down to why does we're put on the planet? What were we put here to do? And,
right.
you know, I really believe that we are put here by God for very specific things. And, you know, the way that plays out can be very fluid and organic. But at the same time, we have our part. And you know, the more that we can do to kind of figure those things out and be in line with that, you know, the more amazing things we get to see and experience. So... couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and see, here's what I see a lot, and I love your idea about this because, you know, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs. I am one.
Right.
And a lot of times people will come to me, and they're coming from what I just term it the corporate mindset background. They've got their business plan laid out. They're going to do this. They're going to make this much money. They're going to pay the bank this much. I mean, it's very... on paper, it looks fine to a banker.
Yeah.
I look
gorgeous.
At it and just go,
it looks
Ugh.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Beautiful.
Exactly. And you and I would look at this and go, but where's your heart? Where's your soul? Where's your path? Are you going to have fun with this? Because if you're not, it may work, but you're going to be miserable.
Exactly.
So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, it's funny because, you know, just as an example, I get to talk with, even in our online program, I have the opportunity to be able to check in with our coaches and get to talk with them live, and you know, the people that go through the program, I should say, and you know, it's interesting because I can talk with them and even in 15 minutes kind of figure out the probability of their success. And one of the things I talk with them about is their ideal client, this kind of concept about what we call an avatar from the standpoint of, you know, who would you do your best work with? Who are you passionate about helping? How, you know, who do you want to build your business around? And it's really interesting because I think I probably shock and maybe even offend some people from time to time, because I'll talk with some people and I'll hear them and I'll ask them, you know, tell me about your avatar. Who are they? Who do you want to work with? Who do you want to help? Who do you want to build your business around? And I'll hear some people that are just incredibly passionate about their avatar. And it's amazing. You know, I'll hear others that are incredibly calculated. And sometimes, again, those are the ones that I might probably offend a little bit, just to be able to say, listen, I think you need to make some decisions about your business plan based on, you know, economic potential and those types of things. But just as you're saying, I said that cannot be the only decision maker. You can't you can't just, you know, and now this is just in some ways about coaching, but in other ways it applies to any business. Because, I'll explain to them, I hear you talk about your avatar in that you've analyzed the markets. You see that the biggest potential, let's say, is with people in their 50s to 60s, helping them navigate retirement. And you're looking at, you know, trends in the generations of the workplace and all of those things, and you're identifying that's the biggest opportunity in coaching. That, therefore, is your avatar. But as I hear you talk about them, there's no passion in your voice.
Or
and
interest.
It's really interesting. And it'd be able to say, listen, I think, you know, it's valid. You make a valid point. But if you're going to be committed to this, you've got to either find a way to be passionate about this group of people or find a different group of people. You know, and that really applies to any business. Later this afternoon, I have the wild blessing of getting to meet with my mastermind group that I get to meet with quite often. And, you know, one of the entrepreneurs in there his business is very different than mine. He has a branding and marketing firm. But he has to do the same thing himself as well as with his own clients all the time when they're designing, you know, new marketing plans, but also just business plans entirely, to say you've got to be passionate about this group. And if you're not, you either need to change that group or you need to find a way to get passionate about them, because that, you know, the customer, the client can know, can tell, but it's also how committed are you going to be to stay with this? When times are tough and when times are good, how committed are you going to be?
Well, and not only that, but especially when you're doing something very personal like coaching, people have a spidey sense. They know when you have their best interest at heart.
Yep.
Yeah, and
exactly
they
right.
know when you're sincere and when you're passionate, when you're engaged, when you're excited, and when your brain is, while you're talking, your brain is skipping ahead going, ooh, I have other ideas. And if you can't bring that to the table, you're doing both of you a disservice.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's so true. So, that's at the core.
So how do you help people find a target audience or a niche that they really can get solidly behind?
Well,
I mean, is there a question-answer series, or do you just kind of...
No, basically, we take people through a process. People actually can go to a website and download a free mini course called The 5 Critical Questions. They can go to trainingtobealifecoach.com.
Mm-hmm.
trainingtobealifecoach.com, which is a long handle, but if that's our blog, and on the right hand side they can download a mini course that helps to start in that process, and then we'll take them through that process a little bit. But one of the things of kind of finding your avatar is that one of the initial steps I think surprises people, but it's basically asking the question: are you willing to allow yourself to not serve everyone?
Exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring it up next. So let's explore
that,
because that's huge.
Give yourself that permission to not feel like you have to serve everyone. Because that's usually, a lot of people start there. Like, I'm starting a business. It doesn't matter if it's coaching or whatever. I'm starting a business. I'm going to try to serve everyone. That's the biggest market. That's the biggest potential, is everyone. But, we've all probably done it or tried it. I know I did. When I first launched my coaching business, I was in that mindset because nobody kind of offered me another mindset. So I was like, hey, I can coach anyone. I knew that I could have an impact. I could help anyone.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I was exhausted because I was running around trying to please everyone, be with everyone, connect with everyone. And then a lot of times the people that I would wind up then connecting with, potentially having a complimentary coaching call with, they weren't a good fit. And I was starting to think, man, I just stink at this, or I'm not excited about this, or it's just not working. And I realized I had not given myself that permission to not try to serve everyone. And so that's really that first step, because once I, for myself, started to realize the type of person I wanted to work with, I started to give myself that permission to say, you know what, I'm not going to try to work with everyone. I'm not going to try to attract everyone. I'm not going to try to promote my business to everyone. And I'm also not going to try to make everybody like or value what I do. I really only care about those folks. I care about everyone, period. But from a business standpoint, I only care about the opinions of those people that I am most trying to serve, and that's my avatar. So, that is critical. And it's interesting. I think you've had John Morgan on your show before.
Yeah, he'll be coming back.
I love John. He's got the Brand Against the Machine is his book. And we got to speak at a conference together recently. And one of his core principles. I'm not sure if he talked about it when he was on, but one of his core principles is that 20-60-20 rule. And basically, it's the whole thing of freeing yourself to go after only a certain population. And he talks about mm-hmm. that, you know, really any brand that's successful understands the 20-60-20 rule, which is 20% of the population will hate you. 60% of the population will be mildly excited or kind of be on the fence. 20%, there's a very good chance that 20% of the population will love you, love what you do, love everything that you do, love everything that you say, want to buy from you, work with you, all of those things. But are you willing to not only have 60% be kind of milquetoast and have 20% hate you? So he said the beautiful thing is that with that 20% that hates you, if they hate you and the 20% that love you find out about it, the 20% that love you will love you more and defend you. And he said, you want proof positive of this, go to a mall and yell, Justin Bieber sucks at the food court. He's like, you will have some people cheer for you, and you will be mauled by a bunch of, you know, teenage girls.
12-year-olds, right.
Justin Bieber's honor. And he's like, it seems like Justin Bieber's done pretty well with his 20%. And I think that, you know, in some ways it's all that, you know, kind of freeing ourselves up to say, okay, who is our 20%? Who are those people that we will, you know, do everything for, connect with? You know, we already speak their language and probably can speak their language even more. We can serve them, love them. Sell products and services to them. Who is that 20%? And giving ourselves that permission to not only go there, but to get excited about going there. Go there boldly. Right. Commit to that. So that's, in some ways, where we start is giving that permission, or even just saying, you know, are you willing to give yourself permission to not try to please everyone?
And, you know, on the face of it, it sounds silly, but it is, it's a very emotional thing. You know, it's a very logical thing, but it's very emotional, because when you have birthed this baby, so to speak, you've got this program or you have these videos or you've got this great idea and you just really genuinely want to help your fellow man, it's hard to give that up. It really
is.
It's
emotional. It's one of the things that people hear that concept to go, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that's just logical, like you said. But it is so much harder than it sounds. And it takes so much guts. It takes so much gut to say, no, I'm not going to try to serve them. No, I'm not going to go bend over backwards. Interestingly or ironically or whatever, the photographer that I talked with this morning, she got this big smile on her face. And at one point she's like, I finally understand what you were talking about with the avatar. And I said, how so? And she's like, I finally told a couple of clients or potential clients no.
I was going to ask you about
that.
That
they don't do. And I said, she's like, in my first year, I said no to no one. And she said, it was awful. She's like, I felt like I had to serve everybody, all that stuff. But she said, she finally started to say no to some people. And what she realized was, in some ways, one, that helped her to start building that no muscle, which is just that, you know, that's a habit in and of itself. That's a discipline in and of itself. But she said, as I did that, she realized, you know, her energy wasn't as depleted from working with people that were a bad fit. Her schedule was freed up to work with more people that were a good fit. And the more that she did that work with people that were a good fit, her true avatar, the more they praised her, the more they were excited about it. And she said her referral business is off the chain now. Because her avatar, you know, who do people hang out with? They tend to hang out with people just like them. I always say avatars are, you know, like birds of a feather, they flock together. So she's like, now I finally get it that I committed to this group of people. And she said, now, you know, I can't get them to stop referring. She's like, I wouldn't want them to. But she said that really took time. And for her, I think, you know, she even said it was about a year of having the guts to say no. And then, you know, a little bit of time of still not always seeing the immediate results of it, but now she's just bathing in the fruit of that. And she, you know, and she was excited. She was beaming. I told her this morning she looked 3 years younger than when I worked with her, you know, 3 years ago, because she's doing what she loves.
Now, I have two questions. And number one, you're speaking my language. I have this same conversation with, you know, virtual assistants and OBMs and web developers that I coach and train. They'll say, oh, but I need the money. No, you don't. You don't need it that bad. And they don't get it. They think I'm nuts. Oh, well, Denise, but you're successful and you can pick and choose. And my response is invariably, I always picked and choosed. One time, Mitch, I changed my business model for a man who just pursued me relentlessly. I need for you to do this. I know you're the best. I want to work with you. It didn't take me 3 months before I cut him loose.
Yep.
And I've never modified my business model for anybody else since. And
that's
I won't.
Beautiful.
I work with people I like to work with.
Yep.
And if for some reason we're a bad fit, I'll explain, you know, I just don't think that we're a great, great fit, but let me find somebody on my team that I think would be phenomenal for you. So I never just say no. I do my
yep.
best to help them, and then I step away from it. But I don't work with people, number one, I don't like, or number two, I don't like their business model. I just
yeah.
don't. And you're right.
Well, that's
right.
The thing.
It does bring me up.
You've got more guts than I do. I didn't start out that strong, but I am wildly grateful that I had a client from hell as one of my first clients. And it was one of those where I was in that phase of, I'll just take anybody that's paying. If they're breathing and paying.
Mm-hmm.
That was really my true criteria for
everybody
a good client, was breathing above ground and paying. And one of those first clients was just this atrocious fit. And I didn't understand the power of the avatar. I didn't understand that the ideal client concept yet. But that was such a horrendous experience. And I had to fire them mid kind of coaching relationship because I was like, I am obviously not the right person for you. And I never, ever wanted to have that experience again. So, you know, in some ways, I started on this road not necessarily by choice, but more by battle scars and, you know, horrible stories. But now, you know, that's kind of one of my passions, especially on this topic, is be able to say, you know, let's start out with more intention than I had. Because like you said, one of the other things is in some ways, even if they are paying and they're a bad fit, you will pay so much more than you get paid. In those situations, you know, I mean, everybody has to make that choice. Everybody, you know, knows where their business is at. But I know for clients, especially in that case, but, you know, other times where on the consulting side, maybe I've had a really rough client where I've, you know, again, violated that same rule or come close to violating that same rule on the consulting side of what we do. And I know that the drain, the energy drain, just all of it, that is so much more on a client that's a bad fit, you really wind up needing to charge 5 times to 10 times more for that client that's a bad fit, and you generally can't. So it's best to just, you know, be able to say no, like you said, refer them on, and there are creative ways to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's referring them, you know, I have systems in place where I can refer people that are a bad fit for my coaching. I can refer them to a few other coaches that I need, you know, I know that maybe they'd be a better fit. We just have a referral agreement set up. So I still get a little something for being able to refer people on.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those where, like you said, I don't have to say no. I can just say not me.
You want to help them. Yeah, we're just
right,
not.
Absolutely.
We can't do it. Whether they can't afford us or they're, yeah, I've had people in the porn industry say, but I want to work with you. Oh, no.
Oh, my friend.
It's like, I don't think
absolutely.
So, but thank you for asking. You know,
yes,
but,
absolutely.
But here's the thing, and I'm sure you know this. When I have to refer somebody away, I never tell the person I'm referring them to why I'm doing it because I don't want to color their perception.
Sure.
So,
that's a great way to put it. It really can depend. But generally, like on the coaching side, I'll let them know. Basically, I'll do the complimentary session where I just basically give them an hour free of coaching. They have to go through a little bit of a filtering process. I used to offer that just to everybody. Now they have to go through a little bit of a filtering process in order to do that. But I'll do that with folks. But just kind of like we talked about a little bit earlier, that can be something that, you know, I used to use just to sell people on working with me. Now I realize that it's something that obviously that's one of the most powerful things I can offer so that they can truly see what it's like to work with me one-on-one.
Sure.
But it also gives me that chance to check them out and kind of kick the tires the other way and say, are we going to be a good fit? Are they open to my, you know, my approach? Are they, you know, that type of person? But what's interesting is that, you know, if I do need to say, hey, I'm going to actually suggest you go to somebody else, I'll in some ways sing that coach's praises. Maybe they truly want somebody that's more of a, you know, a I don't know. There can be different reasons to send them to different places. But I'll let them know a little bit of why I'm suggesting them and why I love this other coach that I'm pointing them to or this other resource, those types of things. But, yeah, you know, it really is. It's probably one of the most powerful concepts a new or even an established entrepreneur has to learn, and that muscle to work is, you know, that muscle to be able to turn some business away. Mm-hmm. But there's so many entrepreneurs that I've talked with that was really a linchpin part or a major milestone in their business where, and, you know, this is the part that a lot of people don't like to hear, but a lot of times that decision, that muscle starts getting worked, not at a time where money's coming out of your ears, not at a time where you got
no,
so
it
much
comes when you need the money. It's when you have to have that money that you have to say no. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
When things are tight, when things aren't, when things aren't good.
Yep. And that's always the case. And when I first started years ago, the client I just referred to was a VA client, a virtual assistant client. But years ago, I had this woman came to me highly recommended through Facebook, which is where I do a lot of business, and she needed some web help. Well, that's what I do. Mitch, honestly, at about midway through the project, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, she just called me drunk. That's all I'm going to say. At midnight, I refunded every penny of her retainer, and I had gone over the retainer. You tend to do that the first month that you work with somebody. And I stopped what I was doing, and I refunded her every penny that she had given me. And I could not afford that, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I also, I also could not afford to have this very well-known woman trash me all over the Internet. And by golly, she didn't. In fact, two or three days later when she sobered up, she did her level best to make me go back on the project, and I just said no. In fact, I said hell no.
Yeah.
And
let me just put an exclamation point on this. Be very clear right now. Yeah. No.
And the person who referred her eventually said, well, I hear it didn't work out. And I said, no, we weren't a good fit. And that was the effective end of it. Yeah, I did a ton of work. I gave the money back, but I felt better about it, and nothing bad rebounded to me. So sometimes you have to just bite the bullet and say, okay, we're not a good fit. We are never going to be a good fit, but here's what I'm going to do just so you're happy and I'm released and then move on.
So true.
But, you know, those are my two horror stories, and let me tell you, I learned from both of them.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? As an entrepreneur, you know, well, they always say you tend to learn more from your mistakes, your setbacks, than you do from your successes. And it's trite because it's true. It needs to be said over and over again. But I look back on our business and so many things that, you know, my biggest lessons, sadly, did not come from my college courses on business. It came from, you know, making mistakes, trying things out, experimenting, and you know, that's the biggest thing is being able to experiment, giving yourself that ability, and also trying to limit the risk as much as possible as you do that. But those are beautiful stories to have, that's for sure, and to have behind you.
Exactly, and I'll tell you what, they don't fade with time. I remember both of them very, very well. But, you know, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you when you were talking about your photographer clients, was she the one that you you're talking about one of your big dream gatherings, and somebody who was a Pulitzer Prize mentored her. Is that the one?
Oh no, that's a different one. Yeah. So that's we've had a lot of folks that have kind of had creative dreams around creative businesses launch their businesses. But no, this is another one. She was actually at one of our early big dream gatherings and posted it at a big dream gathering. That's kind of how I heard about it at first, and then we started to connect and then coached her a little bit. It was just amazing. And, you know, one of the other things that's kind of fun about her story, her name is Jill Fleming. She's just a super, super neat gal. But, you know, one of the things she relayed this morning was that, you know, basically the risks that she took early on, if she knew all of the different risks, all the different things she was going to need to do along the way, she would have never started. But basically what she focused on was that next step. And she's been doing that ever since. And she's had this amazing journey, and creating incredible photography along the way. But she just coming back from having a couple of months in Mexico where she got to be in Mexico for 2 months. And, you know, if somebody had told her she was going to do that 2 or 3 years ago, she would have said, there's no way. So she didn't have the entrepreneurial mindset. She hadn't kind of worked that risk muscle a little bit. And she didn't take blind leaps of faith. It was very calculated. But it's one of those that, again, you know, stepping out in a journey, going after that initial dream she thought of just launching and maintaining a business, you know, it's had much more of a ripple effect than she ever could have imagined. But, you know, her, you know, one of the big things she's realized is she can only kind of focus on that next thing. If she gets too far out there, she can get overwhelmed, worried, crazy, anxious. It's like, I just got to focus on this next step.
Analysis paralysis.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it'll stop you. And here's another thing, and I wonder if you hear this. People want everything to be perfect. They want their paper plan laid out. They want their client list kind of, you know, imagined and ready to go. And they just won't start it because it's not right yet. And I see that a lot.
I think it's interesting. I think perfectionism is one of the biggest enemies of big dreams. Out there. It's one of the things that gets in the way of, you know, going after big dreams, launching businesses, anything. Being able to take creative arts, you know, any creative project, whether it's, you know, an Excel spreadsheet or a canvas with paint on it, any creative endeavor, that perfectionism killed it. And it's interesting in that perfectionism is misdiagnosed so often. You know, so many people think, oh, I'm not a perfectionist because my house doesn't look like a laboratory or a museum. But, you know, one of the things I talk about with perfectionism, and I'm a recovering perfectionist, so I speak from experience. But one of the things, you know, I talk about is that perfectionists are misdiagnosed all the time. I'll tell people that you may be a perfectionist, a little Jeff Foxworthy. You might be a redneck. You know, you might be a perfectionist if you have piles in your house, if you have piles on your desk. Because a perfectionist is a person who will put something on their desk because they don't have the perfect place to file it yet. And then what do? They won't put it away because they don't want to, you know, they don't have that perfect place. So yet then something else gets set on it, something else gets set on it. So you might be a perfectionist if you have piles. And one of the other things is you may be a perfectionist if the only thing that gets you to get the last part of a project done is a fire or a deadline. And basically, you know, most perfectionists are people who get something to 80 to maybe 90%, but they can't get over that last 20 to 10% because it will never be done perfectly. So they can't force themselves to do it. That's a challenge for solo entrepreneurs because a lot of times, you know, when we're working for someone else, deadlines are imposed upon us. So
yeah, you don't have
that deadline that our manager sets for us forces us to break through that last 10 to 20%. When we're a solo entrepreneur or thinking about becoming a solo entrepreneur, we have to figure out ways to push through that last 10 to 20% because nobody's going to be doing that for us. And so that's why so many people never get started with their own business because they've got those perfectionist tendencies and that it's almost, they feel like it's almost impossible to break through that 10 to 20%. Now, we don't generally do that at a conscious level. We tend to do that at a subconscious level. We don't know why that is. We just start, we get it, we get excited, we're we just devote time to it, we love it, we're creating, we're putting a plan together, all those things. We get it to 80%, and then all of a sudden we start getting distracted left and right. Well, there's a very good chance that's actually your inner perfectionist, not actually your lifestyle.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's
interesting. That's why as entrepreneurs, solo entrepreneurs, people pursuing their dream, we've got to figure out ways. That's one of the powers of coaching, whether it's, you know, hiring a coach or finding somebody that will hold you accountable. Because as an entrepreneur, as somebody that's pursuing their dream and they don't have a manager or somebody telling them or imposing deadlines upon them, it's very, very hard to get that last 10 to 20% of any project done, especially if you have any kind of perfectionist. So that's
my hand is in the air. I'm waving my hand in the air going, I think that's me. Can you see me? Seriously? My name
right
is Denise Griffiths, and I'm a perfectionist. I mean, I have those issues. And part of the issue, too, for me, and this is, you know, me being a smart aleck, but, you know, I get lost in my own car. My car nav system will tell me, Denise, turn left here. And you're not the boss of me. And I do the same thing to me. You're not the boss of me.
Absolutely.
I do that.
Go there.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I have the same issues with, you know, I've got several big projects. And here's the thing, and maybe you can give me some coach. We're going to have to talk. I bet I have to coach with you. So I'm willing to bet. Okay, here's the thing. I do phenomenal work for my clients because they expect it of me. And, you know, I need, they're my angel clients, or as you say, your avatar clients. I over-deliver constantly, consistently. It's just who I am. It's how I breathe. When it comes to my own projects, guess what gets put aside? Because I don't impose those deadlines on myself.
Exactly.
Now, why don't I?
You're a plumber with leaky pipes. And it's so easy to attribute that. It's just, oh, I'm just too busy, or, you know,
exactly.
I give my priority to my clients. But, you know, that all those things are very true. I know you're busy. I know that you devote so much time to your clients. But it's that whole thing of, you know, a big part of that is that perfectionism. It is, you know, we have, when we work for others, we have deadlines that are imposed upon us. And so we have to get that done. We do. Whereas a lot of times, that's why a lot of, for example, a lot of speakers, you know, wind up waiting to the very last minute before they get up on stage to finally have their you know, message done. And it's not necessarily because they don't like to prepare. It's just that they're, you know, that perfectionism kicks in so much that, you know, that basically it's that when they get up on stage, it's finally when they're like, oh, well, you know, basically, screw it. I'll just do it. And that's where they finally give themselves permission to not be perfect. It's just got to be done. And that's one of the things where I talk about, what if you gave yourself permission to not to turn in poor work, but what if you gave yourself permission to say, it doesn't have to be perfect, it just has to be done?
You know, as simple as that sounds, my brain is having trouble capturing that.
Yep.
Well, in some
ways, you know, what we talk about is to be able to say, you know, I'm a big believer in rough draft and then implement from there. And so I heard a great story. I saw a famous author. It was one of these authors that she'd published millions of books, yet I didn't know her name. And so many of those authors exist, you know, that here they are. Again, it kind of goes to that 20-60-20 rule that we talked about earlier. You know, this was somebody that had a huge following in a very niche market. And again, I'd never heard of her, but she, you know, sold millions and millions of copies. And she was just this incredible, just kind of this phenom when it comes to producing new work. She was just publishing like crazy. And I'm always, you know, intrigued to say, oh, how does somebody do that? How are they just a machine from a creative standpoint? And one of the things that she talked about, and she said it on Oprah and they had to bleep her out, but basically, Oprah asked kind of a similar question. How do you produce so much work? You know, how do you do it? And she said that basically when she starts, she tangibly takes a marker and takes and basically draws just a nasty line across the first page. And at the top in that marker, she says, my blinking rough draft, my crappy rough draft. Let's just say that. And basically, she gives herself permission on her first draft for it to not be perfect.
Oh.
But yet she still writes, and she sees it all the way through. She gets it all the way done. She doesn't go back and edit. She does, oh, I'm going to tweak this. She sees it all the way through under this banner of my crappy first draft.
And that's all it
that
is. It's just a first draft.
She took up and say, oh, wait, but that's not perfect. Oh, this could be better. She's like, no. This is my crappy first draft.
Right.
And then she sees it all the way through. And once she's seen it all the way through, then it's much easier to go back and say, okay, actually, and she, one of the things she talks about is that, you know, that inner perfectionist the whole time is telling her this is terrible, this is awful. Yep, I know, but it's my crappy first draft. She gets it all the way through. As she's going through, she's thinking a thousand different ways she might change it. She gets all the way done, goes back, and most of the time she would say, actually better than I thought. It's closer than I thought. And so then that also gives her permission to kind of go back and say, I'm almost there. Whereas a lot of times we get stuck along the way through, you know, basically analysis paralysis or, revision heaven, where you just continue to revise. She's like, the key is give yourself permission to not allow it to be perfect, but then also see it all the way through. See at least one draft of it all the way through. And it's probably going to be better than you thought. And it will get you a lot further than you thought.
So that first step is basically just start and finish.
Yep.
Don't take any detours.
Exactly.
And see, I do that with web development because there's so many moving parts to these things. I'll be working in one page or one widget or one plugin, and a thought will occur. Oh, I have to go do this. And yeah. I've had to train myself over time to not stop what I'm working on and go take care of something else that popped up because they do every 3 minutes. So I've had to really, really get brutal with my thinking and say, no, you're going to finish this particular part. Then you'll go do, if you remember what that thing was, you'll go fix it. You know, so, I mean, it's been a learning process for me, too, because, I mean, I found that I love web development. It's very creative. But I found that by stopping, starting, I was adding many hours to a project that should have taken 10 or 15 or 20 hours just by being my, you know, silly perfectionist self.
Exactly. Well, and it's interesting. We could do a whole other hour just on this topic. But when you put perfectionism with kind of the myth of multitasking, it takes it to a whole new level because, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, with social media, with emails coming in all the time, those types of things, we are training our brain to have very, or much shortened attention span. So you put perfectionism, that perfectionist tendency, in with that kind of the way that our brains are kind of being modified to quote-unquote multitask, which doesn't in fact work. It really is kind of a recipe for disaster. So, you know, it's something that applies to anyone, whether it's an entrepreneur, whether it's a manager in a, you know, a Fortune 500 company. All these things probably still apply. So, but it really is, it's even more of a, has even more of an impact if you're, you know, starting a business or pursuing a dream where you don't have a manager hovering over you. When you have to do them for yourself or for your own business, you know, it really does take some discipline to, you know, push through those things, give yourself permission to push those through those things, and maybe not have to be perfect the first time. But
no, and I love that, and I am absolutely going to do that because I'm guilty of that. One thing I have learned to do, though, over time is to do what I call segment intending, which means that, and I'm up and down from my desk all day long. I have to be.
Sure.
Because your brain can take just so much. You need to breathe. You need to move.
Yep.
So I'm up and down probably every 15 or 20 minutes. Hmm. I walk around. I go play with the dog. I may get on my little rebounder. I may just stand in the backyard and watch leaves fall and take a deep breath. 2 minutes later, I'm back. But I take those little 2 and 3 minute breaks all day. And what I have found is by doing that, number one, I let my eyes refocus, which is important. I let my brain kind of settle down. And I can come back in here and segment intend. So I will tell myself before my butt hits that chair, for the next 15 or 20 minutes, I am going to work on this particular part of this particular website and nothing else.
I don't answer
the phone. I don't look at email. I don't go on Facebook. I'm concentrating on that segment. And by doing that, I can plow through a ton of work each day.
I bet.
So
that's great.
You know what?
Especially the level of detailed work that you do, but anybody, anybody can learn from that approach.
Well, and it helps
me
because otherwise, you know, I'll find that I'm stuck in my office, my back hurts, my brain hurts, my eyes are tired, I don't feel good, and I'm not enjoying what I'm doing. Well, that's no way to work.
Exactly right. There's no way to work, no way to live. And, you know, that's
the
thing is you started your own business, so you have more control over exactly what your work environment is, how you go about it. And, you know, that's what we hear a lot from the folks that, you know, go through our coaching program, but really any entrepreneurs, that's one of the main reasons why they go after starting their own business. But a lot of times, unless you're wildly intentional about it, you know, people can find themselves in a worse situation in their own business just because they don't do things like you said, create intentional kind of systems to make it a great work environment. So I congratulate you for being intentional about that.
Well, it took me some time to learn how to do that. You know, when we first start out, and I bet you see this a lot, when we first start out as entrepreneurs, we tend to be a little isolated. We don't know to ask for help. We don't know who to go to for tips or actionable advice. You know, we get online and we look around at things and we get great ideas, but we don't really know how to put these ideas into action. And for me, that is why coaching and masterminding are just critical components of business. But in the beginning, I think we do tend to be a little isolated. We're trying to do it all ourselves. We're saving money. We're learning. And it can get ugly quickly.
It really can. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think there's one of the things we talk about is, you know, probably the biggest risk to becoming an entrepreneur, biggest risk of becoming a coach is the, you know, and basically we ask people, are you willing to take the biggest risk? And the biggest risk is actually doing this and being yourself as mm-hmm. you do. Now, that sounds weird, but especially when it even relates or connects to what you were saying, you know, so often we start out, at, especially like going into an industry of coaching, we think, or we're tempted at least think, that we need to be perfect. If people are going to hire us to help them to go after a dream, to make their life better, then our life needs to look perfect. And so
right.
we, in some ways, we have that temptation to have a persona that we've got it all together, we know exactly what we're doing, and we don't need help. And I think
right.
that's one of the biggest
right.
tendencies, especially for new entrepreneurs, new coaches, anyone pursuing something new, is that temptation to look like we've got it all together. I know for me that was one of the biggest things that caused isolation in my life as a new entrepreneur was that whole thing of, I don't want to ask anybody for help because I don't want to seem like I don't know what I'm doing. And that was probably one of the most detrimental things to my overall business. But when I realized, no, everybody knows I don't know what I'm doing anyway, so why not be bold about it and ask and have some fun and pursue relationships that will help, you know, and those types of things. And, you know, that to me, it's in some ways feels like the biggest risk. But once you break through that, you realize it looks like a brick wall, but it's actually cellophane. And once you break through that, you give yourself permission to take that risk, to be yourself, to, you know, not have to have all the answers, not all of it. You know, it opens up all sorts of possibilities as an entrepreneur, as a coach, really in life in general, it makes all the difference. So, you know, we always encourage people, you know, are you willing to take that risk? And if you are, it will make all the difference.
And the more minds you can bring to a problem, the more solutions you have.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And here's the thing, and you're so right. I've been there. I have done that. You know, when I started out, I was very isolated, largely because I was one of the very few that can do it all. I mean,
yeah,
I literally
exactly.
can
That's
do the web.
You're wildly talented. You could do it all for crying out loud.
And I did because I'm arrogant that way. And I almost killed myself. I mean, it was killing me. And I was not going to ask for help. I didn't want to be perceived as, you know, not being the brilliant being that I know I am. I mean, how silly is that? And once I started opening up and saying, you know, I've got questions and I would love to answer them, this is what I found out immediately. The entrepreneurial community is enormously helpful, and they are gracious, and they are so willing to help.
Yeah.
Just ask
It's
us.
Amazing.
Seriously,
and it winds up being an opportunity for you to do what you do and probably helping someone else, you know, do what they do best.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's wound up, you know, the greatest kind of surprise in all of that for me has been a lot of times when I've pursued help, it's wound up, you know, creating great relationships. That,
right.
You know, that created a lot of opportunities for me to do my best work for somebody else or with someone else that does their greatest work in my area of need. You know, again, there's some great surprises, you know, as you unwrap this box of going after a dream, starting a business, those types of things.
And here's the thing, we're all very approachable with one or two exceptions that I've come across, but I find that most people who do what we do, whatever our industries are, we want to see other people succeed. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah.
If we're not holding back. We're not going to ignore you because you might cut into our business. We want to help you.
Yeah. Well, I love your attitude. I think you're right. I think most people are that way. Not everybody's that way, but when you have more of an abundance mentality like yourself, you know, obviously has a huge impact on your life and the way that you walk out life. And, you know, looking for those people that really have that same mindset. And I so agree with you. As you find those, you know, it just winds up enriching everybody's experience.
It really does. And you know what? I'm looking at my list of questions that I wanted to ask you, and guess what? Didn't get to one.
Doggone.
Didn't get to the first one.
Well, you know what that means? That means I got to be on again.
It does. It does.
Yay. All right. I didn't even have to have a tech glitch this time.
No, and, you know, it wasn't deliberate on my part at all.
I love it.
But, you know, I do want to, the next time you come back, I do want to talk about more about coaching because seriously, I think coaching, mentoring are just so important. If you don't have a coach or you don't have a mentor or if you don't have a group of people that you can go to and kind of bounce things off of, that's your first mistake in business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's finding those right people. And there are people that are created to also coach. And we want to equip those folks to maybe make a business out of it and potentially a very profitable business out of it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, honestly, the more people you help, the better you feel about yourself, the more inspired you are to do what you do.
Yep.
And the happier you go to bed, seriously.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right.
I know. We are out of time, and, you know, I've got a ton of things that I want to talk with you about, so... And I do want to talk with you about coaching, too. So I'm going to go through your little where do I go? Where do I go to get that?
TrainingToBeALifeCoach.com, TrainingToBeALifeCoach.com, or MitchMatthews.com. Either one will get you there. But TrainingToBeALifeCoach.com, people can download that free mini course. It'll help them to ask some of those questions they need to be asking themselves.
Okay, so people know where to find you. You're on Facebook. You're on Twitter.
Yes.
You're pretty much everywhere out there.
That's right.
So, MitchMatthews.com and training to become
a life coach.
That is a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. It's a long one. But
I know. I am so glad you were here with me the whole hour today. I love chatting with you. I learned so much from you. And I can't wait to have you back again on the show. It'll be early next year, if that's okay with you.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks so much, Denise. You asked great questions. Obviously, you're doing what you were created to do, and it's an honor to get to talk with you today.
Thank you, Mitch. Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and the great Mitch Matthews wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Bye.